Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Hannah Pagel. Our guest this week is Illinois Democrat and House Ag Committee member Eric Sorensen, who joins us to offer the latest on where things stand with the government shutdown and what climate policy could look like in the next farm bill. We will also have a special report from AgriPulse's Spencer Chase, who is on a USDA trade mission in Santiago, Chile. But first, here's this week's headlines. Mississippi River water levels are at historic lows, which means increased cost and slower delivery for crops heading toward the Gulf of Mexico, especially at a time when harvest season is ramping up around the Midwest. Some companies are not fully loading barges because of the possibility of them becoming grounded or scraping the riverbed. The river has also narrowed, which means fewer barges can travel through the river at the same time. According to USDA, ships are carrying close to 76% less grain down the river than the three-year average. The Senate Ag Committee held a hearing on foreign agricultural land ownership in the United States. USDA official Gloria Montano Green told lawmakers the department uses a self-reporting paper-based system to track foreign land purchases. She also said USDA is working to comply with the fiscal year 2023 appropriations bill, which called for the agency to create a searchable online database of foreign investment information. However, she says the agency is limited from doing more without more funding. Elsewhere on Capitol Hill, lawmakers still have a lot of work to do to avoid a government shutdown, which could start on Sunday. House Republicans debated amendments this week to a fiscal 2024 spending bill that would cut funding for USDA and the FDA. However, the bill is not expected to pass in the Senate. Congressman Eric Sorensen represents Illinois' 17th district. As the clock begins to run out on funding the government, we asked him what a possible resolution looks like.
I mean, we have to look at this point forward. A continuing resolution has to have the same funding that we had in fiscal year 2023. We can't make cuts in a continuing resolution. And I'm all for finding the waste that we have in government to lower our deficit. And those are great ideologies to have. But we have to understand the CR process allows us to get to a point to allow the appropriators to work, such that we can get that budget for calendar year 2024.
So let's talk about some provisions. You know, why won't Democrats agree to include border security provisions in a stopgap spending bill? You know, the polls have made it pretty clear that voters are very concerned about border security as an issue.
I introduced amendments that would have added border patrol. For quite the same reason as our frustration when we go to a grocery store and there's only one checkout that's open, and then we see that there's 16 lanes that are not being used. That's what we have here at the southern border today. We need to make sure that we're processing the potential legal immigration into our country. Instead, there is just this traffic jam of frustrated people. We have an immigration system that isn't working right now. Too many people here among us in Congress are playing a dangerous game of politics today. We need border security. There's no question about it. We need to keep the government open. And I think that these are apples and oranges today. And by the way, if we shut down the government, we're literally defunding border security. And so we're making the problem worse.
So with all the craziness that's going on Capitol Hill, where does this leave the farm bill debate if the government does shut down?
A shutdown that we're looking at will immediately affect and stress farm families. I mean, especially those that require, off-farm income through loans to keep their farms. We're dealing with a drought scenario right now. There's already stress on our farmers today. And so right now, the partisan bickering that's going on in Washington is adding to the stress of our family farmers.
We'll be right back with more from Representative Sorensen right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
At Clean Fuels Alliance America, we're working toward a future of clean energy now that will make our members proud. We serve as the clean fuels industry's primary organization for technical, environmental, and quality assurance programs, and are the strongest voice for its advocacy, communications, and market development. With industry-leading programs and incentives, Clean Fuels Alliance America is actively moving the clean fuels industry forward toward a brighter future.
Welcome back. Before coming to Congress, Representative Sorensen was a TV meteorologist. Using his background, he says there are many ways the conversation around climate can be infused into the Farm Bill discussion.
For 20 years, I spent my career in the same congressional district that I now serve. And so I was one of the first meteorologists to talk about climate change on local television. Why did I do it? I wasn't trying to make a political point because I was not a political person. I was talking about it because it was already having real life impacts on the people in my community. And I never once said that anybody was doing anything wrong or vilifying anyone. Instead, here are the facts. And whether it is a political issue to you, then it's political to you, but it's not political to me. And I don't think that the solutions and finding the best answers for the next generation should be political either. What we need to make sure that we are doing, and this is good not only for the sustainability of our family farms, but for our kids and our grandkids, is we need to make good decisions. And we shouldn't let our politics cloud what's going on. We know things are changing. And if we continue to play politics with something that is science-based, it's not going to solve the problem. And so I'm willing to work across the aisle to make sense of it, because I'm one of the unique members of Congress that got here without the political baggage. And so it doesn't matter who I work with to find the solutions.
So one of your Illinois counterparts argued this week that farmers don't want Congress to put more money into climate research hubs and climate adaptation efforts. From your experience, boots on the ground, you know, how concerned do you think farmers are about climate change?
I talk with farmers almost on a daily basis. We must have different farmers that we're talking to. I'm talking to family farmers. I'm talking with producers. I'm talking with folks in precision ag and in crop science. We have an understanding that things are changing. And I think we have to today separate the people that are really angry. I don't know about you, but I don't make good decisions when I'm angry. Okay. I make good decisions when I'm calm and level-headed, and I put the people around the table and we listen to one another. That's how we make good decisions. And that's who I'm surrounding myself with, all of the people in Northwestern and Central Illinois, to help make good decisions. I mean, one of those good decisions, I believe, is the development of biofuels for sustainable aviation fuel. Farmers are going to be the solution to the problem, okay? And I think that makes good sense, not only when you're talking about a farm, but it makes good sense here on Capitol Hill too.
So the Inflation Reduction Act has already put $20 billion into conservation and climate smart programs. But, you know, what more does the Farm Bill need to do to address this issue?
Yeah, I mean, look, we have to make sure that the Farm Bill lasts 5 years, right? It can't just be what we're going to need today. It has to be how we look at the demands going forward for 5 years. One of the things that I hear about every day from farmers, and one of the things that I'm championing in the Farm Bill, is to be able to make sure that we have more robust crop insurance. Look, I mean, we're having more extreme weather events than we've ever had before. And so this is way beyond any argument over any climate change that's going on. We're going to have different problems going forward when we look out 5 years. So crop insurance is going to be key.
Congressman, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, no, it was great. Good to be with you.
We'll be right back with a USDA trade mission update in Santiago, Chile. But first, our Quentin Slater takes a look at renewable and biodiesel production capacity in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
The U.S. is producing more renewable diesel than biodiesel for the first time, according to a report from the U.S. Energy Information Administration. EIA figures show renewable diesel production capacity numbers have risen significantly since 2021, while biodiesel production capacity numbers are down 13%. This chart shows the annual U.S. biofuel production capacity for biodiesel and renewable diesel from 2021 to this year. You can see in 2023, the U.S. can produce up to 3 billion gallons of renewable diesel. In contrast, the amount of biodiesel that can be produced is slightly less than 2.1 billion gallons. According to EIA, renewable diesel accounted for 13% of all biofuel production capacity this year, while biodiesel accounted for 9%. The remaining 78% is fuel ethanol. The report also shows Louisiana and Texas have the two highest production capacities for renewable diesel. More than 60% of renewable diesel is produced along the Gulf Coast. It's important to note that these numbers are accurate as of January 1st of this year, which is the most up-to-date data provided by EIA. For AgriPulse, I'm Quentin Slater.
Who mapped the soybean genome? You did. Who's replacing the petroleum and asphalt? You are. Who created biodiesel that increased your income 63 cents per bushel? You again. When you pool your resources through your soy checkoff, you're making sales. You're making breakthroughs that all come back to your bottom line. That's you. That's who. As your soy checkoff, moving soy forward, moving you forward.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Welcome back. AgriPulse's Spencer Chase is traveling with USDA's Agribusiness Trade Mission in Santiago, Chile this week, and USDA Trade Undersecretary Alexis Taylor is leading the delegation of U.S. businesses, government officials, and commodity group leaders, and sat down for an exclusive interview with AgriPulse to discuss the trip.
Undersecretary Taylor, appreciate you making some time for us here on this trade mission in Santiago, Chile. And I guess my first question is, thinking about the expectations you had in advance of this mission, comparing it to the reality of actually being here, how do those two stack up?
Yeah, I think it's definitely exceeded my expectations. I have never been to Chile before, and I have learned so much in just a short time about this market, the benefit and ease for U.S. businesses to come into this market, to be able to conduct business here with a really, truly reliable trading partner that we have. And I think our businesses and industry associations who are with us have really reiterated that as I've gotten time to talk with them. Everyone's expectations have been exceeded. I think the business-to-business meetings have been going exceedingly well and have only heard really positives. And we're estimating by the end of the week over 350 business-to-business meetings. So that's just exceptional to hear.
You mentioned the business being done here in this country, but we also probably should acknowledge the fact that Chile has two very productive agricultural neighbors, shares a border with Argentina. Brazil isn't too far away. What gives the U.S. confidence that it can be competitive in an environment like that, especially when you consider the growing relationship between Chile and China?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, we have had a long bilateral relationship with Chile. We're actually celebrating the 200th anniversary of our diplomatic relations. And at the same time this year, we're also celebrating the 20th anniversary of our free trade agreement with Chile, which has opened and liberalized U.S. agricultural products fully into this market. And so we have very low barriers of entry. I think the U.S. brand recognition really is exceptional here. Consumers look for that made in the USA, American flag. They know it to be high quality. They know it to be safe and affordable. And so they're really a strong brand recognition, I think, for our businesses as well. Also on the trade mission, I should mention, we have buyers in from Peru and Ecuador. And so we're bringing kind of regional buyers as well as we look to really expand business opportunities, not just in Chile, but also the region.
Mm-hmm. I understand part of your schedule here also involved a lot of bilateral meetings with Chilean government officials. What was the message you were hoping to convey in those conversations?
Overall, we have a very positive bilateral relationship with Chile. Few market access issues, but we do have them. One in particular is around the potential use of very generic terms for the United States meat and cheese products. So terms like Parmesan and feta. So really engaging with them about ensuring that that market access that was negotiated 20 years ago in our free trade agreement, we're able to sell and export those products to the Chilean market. Of roughly the just over 35 businesses we have between the trade mission and the Espacio food show that's also going on here, about 10 of them are cheese business or dairy businesses looking to export cheese, and in particular, products like Parmesan to the Chilean market. So ensuring that market access is protected is critical for us.
We'll have more from Undersecretary Taylor right after this.
Did you know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time? Take us wherever you go. Subscribe at AgriPulse.com or on Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
It's not as simple just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Welcome back. The state of funding for agricultural trade promotion has been a hot topic for commodity groups and congressional leaders preparing for Farm Bill deliberations. USDA Trade Undersecretary Alexis Taylor says events like this week's trade mission to Chile underscore the benefit of the investments that are already on the books.
So I think trade missions are really important for kind of de-risking the trade proposition for our agribusinesses and our industry. We've had three trade missions so far this year. This is our fourth. We've had one to the Netherlands, Japan, and Panama. And what we've seen on projected sales for those three trade missions is almost $35 million worth of sales projected over 12 months coming out of them. So real business is getting done. Real connections are being made. So I think they are critically important. At the same time, the market development programming that we oversee at USDA, the market access program known as MAP, the foreign market development program known as FMD, are highly leveraged programs with federal government and industry dollars, and they see a really high rate of return. I think we've seen this over and over again. I think it is why Congress is having such an important conversation as they discuss Farm Bill funding, is because people see the benefit that these programs and these dollars really do in supporting U.S. businesses expanding their agricultural export picture. We are facing some strong trade headwinds, and I think these programs, trade missions like this ATM in Chile, only become more and more important to ensure we're able to compete in a diverse set of markets around the world.
Mm-hmm. So we have a report at AgriPulse that the department is considering $2.5 billion in Commodity Credit Corporation funding for agricultural trade promotion. I have not seen an official department announcement on that. If you'd like to spill the beans on that, I'm certainly not going to get in your way. But I do wonder, as you study the issue of the trade promotion needs around the world, the desires of American agriculture, as well as there is some donation funding that we've reported in that announcement as well. what does $2.5 billion get you? Does that make a big enough dent in the issue, do you think?
Well, I would say first, we really appreciate and share the sentiment of Senator Stabenow and Senator Bozeman for the how important these programs are, how important export markets are, how useful programs like MAP and FMD have been to our agricultural community, to our export community. So I think there are some unique challenges ahead of us, and we certainly appreciate the senators' requests that they had sent to us. And we're reviewing that request and looking at authorities, but also available CCC funding to ensure that we can meet the statutory requirements placed upon the CCC. I would say I do think it highlights how beneficial those programs have been, some of the huge challenges, those trade headwinds that we're experiencing, to be able to help U.S. businesses compete. These are the foundation that is built upon for small and mid-sized businesses, for our various industries. There's true benefit here. And I heard that from many of the businesses I've had the opportunity to meet with this week. And I think what the senators asked really underscored the great work we're doing here and also the growing need that we see around food security as well.
Mm-hmm. Wrapping up our conversation, you said this week to the contingent that was gathered here in Chile that we should see the 24 agenda sometime soon in terms of the trade missions that USDA will be going on. Curious, what can you tell us about the perhaps geographies, the industries, the markets generally that USDA plans to prioritize in 2024?
Yeah, so this year we're doing 6, as I mentioned, trade missions, and we really see them as an important tool as we look at market diversification and, again, de-risking that trade proposition for new exporters or someone who's looking to expand. In 2024, we are looking at also doing 6 to a diverse set of countries around the world and markets around the world. And so look for that, I think, a formal announcement by end of year. But I will say we are also looking at how we can advance equity goals as well. How can we make sure that diverse businesses, small and medium-sized businesses are really taking advantage of these and that they're taking those businesses to a diverse set of markets that are useful to them. Next year will be the first year that we have a tribal-focused trade mission, where we'll be working with the Intertribal Ag Council, tribal-owned businesses, Native American-owned businesses, and taking them to the Canadian market. And so trying a different model to really make sure that we're also investing in equity work in our trade missions as well.
Undersecretary Taylor, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
You can read more about the U.S.-Chile relationship in this week's AgriPulse newsletter, and we'll be back with more AgriPulse newsmakers. But first, Quentin Slater takes a look at organic crop insurance policies in this week's Map It Out.
Many consider crop insurance to be the most important part of the farm safety net, and USDA's Risk Management Agency has continued to expand this public-private partnership with more types of coverage options, especially for organic producers. The first organic crop insurance policies were written in 2002, but the 2014 Farm Bill required USDA to establish organic price elections for all organic crops. The number of organic policies sold continues to grow, from about 5,400 to over 11,000 in 2022. According to USDA, those policies covered nearly 2 million acres. This map shows where the highest number of organic insurance policies were sold by county last year. Some of the states with the most policies sold include California, Washington, and Texas. Montana and Texas both had over 200,000 acres covered by insurance. 4 other states had over 100,000 acres covered. Wheat, corn, and soybeans are 3 of the most common organic crops insured. For AgriPulse, I'm Quentin Slater.
Who mapped the soybean genome? You did. Who's replacing the petroleum and asphalt? You are. Who created biodiesel that increased your income 63 cents per bushel? You again. When you pool your resources through your soy checkoff, you're making sales, you're making breakthroughs that all come back to your bottom line. That's you. That's who. As your soy checkoff, moving soy forward, moving you forward.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Thanks again for tuning in to another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. The government shutdown will go into effect Sunday if lawmakers cannot come to a deal before then. Our Philip Brasher will be in Houston for the Sustainable Aviation Futures North America Congress. And finally, USDA will release a couple of monthly reports, including fats and oils on Monday and dairy products on Wednesday. We'll keep you up to date with our coverage on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Hannah Pagel. Take care of yourself.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit AgriPulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.